Well, as you know, I'm not one to talk a lot about the news during the homily, but certainly you've all heard about the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, recognizing that there is no such thing as a constitutional right to abortion. Indeed, using the word right in relation to abortion is entirely misleading. As Catholics, we're proud to protect life at all its stages. It's a good thing that the law no longer protects this atrocity of abortion. At the same time, we're aware that the legal aspects are merely one dimension of the complex reality. So we as a church are committed to redouble our efforts to help vulnerable children before and after birth, as well as to provide support for their parents. The Good Shepherd Parish is actively participating in the Walking with Moms in Need initiative. So if you know anyone or come across anyone in the future in a crisis pregnancy, our compassionate staff and other volunteers are here to support and walk with them. So please reach out in any need. And finally, a word for anyone who might be experiencing anxiety or feeling maybe re-traumatized regarding something in your past, as abortion has taken center stage in our nation's public debate. Please know that healing resources and opportunities are available to you. Especially recommend the excellent ministry of Project Rachel, which has listened to, accompanied, and assisted in the healing of thousands of post-abortive men and women. So that's Project Rachel, an anonymous ministry of healing. So we rejoice, but we know there is lots of work for us to continue to do to heal our world. Now today, we dive back into ordinary time after Lent and Easter and then the various solemnities of the past few Sundays. It's year C in our three-year cycle, so we're going through Luke's Gospel. We kind of dive right into the middle of Luke's Gospel. What just happened was the transfiguration of Jesus, the turning point where Jesus reveals His glory, yet at the same time reveals His destiny, that He is to suffer, to die, but on the third day rise again. And this very same chapter is what we heard today. It's the ninth chapter of Luke's Gospel. We hear Jesus resolutely determines to journey to Jerusalem. Okay, why and what does that mean? Well, Jerusalem is the place of His Passover from death to life. Jesus knows that this is where He's going to die. And Jesus knows that this is His final journey on earth. And so He sets His face. That's what the Greek means literally. He sets His face on towards Jerusalem. He is going there. He is determined to do it no matter what the cost, no matter what the obstacle. So from this point in the Gospel, the tone is certainly different. It's much more serious. The fate that awaits Jesus is revealed in more and more detail. And at the same time, the consequences of following Jesus become more and more clear. What it means, and what's going to come about if someone chooses to follow Jesus. How resolute is Jesus? Well, first we hear that He doesn't go around Samaria, where He knows He will not be welcome as a pious Jew, but He decides He's going to go through it. It's the most direct route physically, and even though He will experience rejection and opposition, He fears not these things. He's going to take the most direct route towards His goals. That's a sign for us of how serious Jesus is to fulfill His mission to the end. Now, during this journey, we hear about three encounters with people who have kind of various caveats to their desire to follow Jesus. And we get the sense that Jesus sets an impossibly high standard for His disciples. Don't we? It just, all these things seem strange, extreme, over the top. Now, rather than go into detail about each of these various circumstances, I'm just going to try to speak in general terms and simple terms. But certainly this gospel makes us think about our own commitment to Jesus. Has it occurred to you recently that Jesus, the King of Glory, is inviting you to follow Him in much the same way that He invited these people to follow Him? And what's our response? For this invitation to mean something, it clearly entails more than just saying yes to having Jesus as part of my life. Because if that's all that it meant, then the demands that He's making don't make any sense. They're overreaching. They're out of proportion. These demands that He makes only make sense if He has a claim to be the first in your life, your highest priority. So if He is first, that means that He's not just a part of your life, but He's the center of your life. Our relationship with Him informs every aspect of our life, everything that we do, every decision we make, how we spend our time, everything about our life finds its meaning and purpose, its direction from that relationship with Him. All of it falls under His sovereignty. He is not a part of my life. He is first in my life. He is Lord of my life. Without that, the things that He's demanding, they're just too much. They're just unreasonable. Okay, but why would we make Him first? Why would we put Him first? It seems to have to do with His proclamation that the kingdom of God is at hand. Before we talk about that, perhaps it's worth remembering the state of unhappiness and unrest and turmoil and angst that we experience when we have something or someone else as sovereign in our lives. Right? Before we say, why should we put Jesus first? What's life like when we don't have Him first? If we put something like wealth and money first, we know that it's never enough. Right? If that's the first thing in our life, always going to be expending all of our energies towards acquiring more and more, and it's never enough. If our ego is the thing that we really worship, if that's at the center of our life, if that's our highest good, our own sense of self, don't we find that we're always wrestling for more influence? We want more friends, we want more praise, we want more power, and it's never enough. And it's just, the treadmill goes faster and faster, and we get more and more tired trying to keep up. If our passions, our desires, or our fear of pain are what's most important to us, the highest good that we seek, don't we find that our pleasures are so fleeting? We just can't hold on to them. And we find that our security is always threatened, no matter what we do to try to control our circumstances and bring security. There's something that always threatens our peace. See, when we put ourselves first, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't give what we truly desire. So, recognizing this reality opens us up to the possibility of putting another first in our life. Submitting ourselves to some idea or some pursuit that's good in its own, for its own sake, or perhaps to another person, putting them first. Jesus' claim is, to summarize, that He is the idea above all ideas. That He is the highest pursuit. That He is the one truly worthy of our love. He says, I am the way and the truth and the life. And if He is, right, then He is worthy of being the first in our life, of being sovereign in our life. Now, somebody might ask then at this point in the gospel, like, from what we have seen, and maybe it'd be worth kind of going back and reviewing where we're at, because we're just going to go, you know, straight through the gospel from this point on Sundays. But one might ask, well, has Jesus sufficiently proven to His disciples that He is the way and the truth and the life? That He is the highest good? That He should be the Lord? You could certainly debate, like, has He revealed enough? Has He shown enough? But perhaps more to the point for us, for you and me, is, has He sufficiently proven it in your life? Right? What would it look like for Jesus to prove to you that He is the way? That He is the truth? That He is the life? Right? So what would it take for Jesus to do that? Or turning the tables, perhaps, have you given Him the opportunity to prove it? Have you allowed Him to reveal this to you in your life? If you let Him do it, if you let Him reveal it, we can see the lengths to which people are willing to go in order to follow Him. We call these people the saints, right? They're willing to go to any length so that they don't lose their union, their connection with Jesus, because everything else in the world to them now is, as St. Paul would say, it's rubbish, it's meaningless, it's worthless, it has no value in relation to the supreme good of knowing Jesus Christ, my Lord. So, what He asks of us then, if we recognize that He is this supreme good, what He asks us to give up or to sacrifice in order to follow Him is no further than He Himself is willing to go, leaving behind all comfort and security, leaving behind family and career, leaving behind custom and expectations of others, leaving behind everything and embracing nothing but the cross. Right, this is what Jesus is willing to do. That's where He is willing to go. And so nothing that He demands of His disciples is more extreme than what He Himself lives. But we find that it's by Him giving of Himself in this way that He intends to prove why they should put Him first. Because in His supreme act of love, they recognize that the kingdom of God is at hand, precisely in Him who reveals Himself as the Lord of life, who conquers death. So perhaps it's no surprise that many of these people see His demands as too steep, too difficult. But we, after the resurrection, right there before the resurrection, we have heard of and perhaps experienced the power of this new life of the resurrection. And so we are the ones that are invited with that full knowledge to follow Me, Jesus says. Don't worry about what is behind. Just follow Me. I want to encourage you this week not to just hear me asking you to follow Jesus, but to search out some time this week to be in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, perhaps during Eucharistic Adoration. We have multiple times of Eucharistic Adoration here at the parish, or, for example, over at St. Maria Goretti every Tuesday and Thursday from 8:45 until 8 p.m. The church is open for Eucharistic Adoration all day and night. But just to go to Him, to spend time in His presence, to hear it from his heart to you, follow me. And yeah, we might encounter all sorts of resistance or excuses or this or that. But in the end, when we recognize that it is him who is the way and the truth and the life who invites us, that all of those excuses can melt away into a simple, yes, I will go. The adventure of discipleship begins with that yes. Begins with us saying, I'm not going to cling to any of these other things or give heed to any of these excuses anymore. Yes, I will follow you. And who knows? Who knows where God is going to lead us? But we know it is to something great and glorious, something beyond our imagining, something much higher than we could ever imagine for ourselves.